This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we take you on a trip up the Duckabush River to learn how to be a Jefferson Land Trust Preserve Steward. So now, let's go inside the Compass. The Duckabush River overran its banks after steady rains all day and into Thursday night. But by the time Jefferson Land Trust Stewardship Associate Carrie Clendaniel arrived on a sunny Friday morning at the Duckabush Oxbow and Wetlands Preserve out at the end of River Road, the water was already receding, leaving a fresh layer of mud and sand high up on the banks. Carrie's mission that day was to orient and train fresh recruits Monica Fletcher and Peter Guerrero in the skills and responsibilities of being Jefferson Land Trust Preserve stewards, a task in which she was joined by veteran Land Trust steward Justin Lake.
So should we bring our packs?
Or yep, we're going to be out for a couple hours. Introduce everybody. Justin, have you met Peter and Monica?
No, we have.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. So you are three of the four stewards for this Duckabush Oxbow and Wetlands Preserve. Dick Stockman is our other steward, and he is out of town at this point. So sad to miss us, but he's looking forward to working with everyone in the spring. And what we want to do today is take a walk about the property and get to know the place and also talk about what kinds of preserve steward duties we need to be taking care of on this particular property and how it might work to have the four of you and me all working together to make sure that the different tasks are getting handled throughout the year. This is an app that you can download to your phone, and then it uses your internal GPS signal to locate you within your boundaries.
Excellent.
A little bit less necessary on this particular preserve because our boundaries are pretty clear. We'll look at some of them today, but not all of them. But in certain other places like the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, with all the trails and the small parcels, it's really difficult sometimes for our stewards to know exactly where the conservation land is and where the recreational lands start.
Does it have a GPS coordinate too, like if you were out and you needed to know where a poached carcass of an elk or a, you know?
We are working on a feature which I can get working with this device, but I can't get it working with multiple other devices, which is why I'm thinking we might need to just check the iPad in and out. But we're working on a feature where you can actually take a data point at a certain spot.
Can drop a pin or something.
Exactly. Yeah, and then it says, you know, here is this feature that I found and here's a photo of it.
So now just to orient, so this is obviously private land down here and we're standing among a bunch of houses. So
River Road.
Is there any public land around here? Is this all private all the way around?
See all that green? Light green outline.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's National Forest. And across
from us. So it's at a bit of a remove from here. I mean, we're not contiguous with it, but
actually, by the end of this year, we're going to acquire 150 acres directly across the river, and that will connect up to Department of Natural Resource School Trust land and the National Forest.
Okay.
We are going to have a corridor here of thousands of acres.
But the school trust lands, well, I guess the National Forest as well, are subject to logging, right?
Yeah.
So,
We're pretty close to a lot of industrial timberland right across the river. We're close to Department of Natural Resource land, and we're close to some large private lots. So hunting happens here, as long as it doesn't happen on our preserve, which is why we're going to be installing no hunting signs while we are out today at all the access points.
So now, when did the Land Trust acquire this piece? I guess it's in two parts, right? There was 5 acres.
There are three acquisitions have happened here in the past 5 years to create this 40-some acre preserve. The first was acquired right here in in 2009 with just 5 acres at the end of the road. And since that time, in the past 2 years, we acquired first an upstream parcel, a really fantastic, extensive wetlands complex with some side channels. And in just this past March, we acquired a connector piece. That also includes about 650 feet of the river. So we've got a very long stretch of river here, a couple of elk meadow areas, some nice forest habitat, and several wetlands. We've got some forested wetlands, and we also have some really unique sedge wetlands here.
So what was it that attracted the Land Trust to this area initially?
In considering any potential acquisition or protection effort, most of what we do is through conservation easement, where the land remains privately owned with certain restrictions that live with the land, and otherwise it passes from one owner to the other. A smaller part of what we do is own these preserves, like the Duckabush, Oxbow, and Wetlands Preserve. And for any of these types of protection efforts, we have a conservation projects committee that is made up of just local folks who are interested in our conservation efforts. And we have a set of conservation criteria that helps us determine if there's a specific wildlife habitat or a unique forest type, or if there's agricultural values or sustainable timber potential on any given piece of land. And the Duckabush, as you know, is home to all sorts of salmon and avian species and has some really, really fantastic habitat.
Now, is the Land Trust allowing fishing on their property here, or is that something that you have control over?
That's a good question. For this particular property, within the limits that are set by Department of Fish and Wildlife, fishing is an appropriate use. For many of our other properties, it may not be an appropriate use, and we certainly do not allow any kind of terrestrial hunting.
But in terms of just recreation, going for a hike and so on, this is open to the public?
This is open to the public for passive recreational use, nature walking, picnicking, bird watching, kind of dawn to dusk, leave no trace. And if you do ever come back down to the Duckabush, you'll see that we've got an interpretive sign set up here at the preserve entrance off of River Road that will help tell the conservation story of this place. It helps tell visitors some of the wildlife and fish species that are protected by this preserve, and it also gives some guidelines for how this place can be appropriately used by members of the public.
At this point, Carrie instructed her trainees to open the Jefferson Land Trust Preserve Steward Manual she had distributed earlier to the Duckabush, Oxbow, and Wetlands Preserve Management Plan section at the back.
Our Duckabush, Oxbow, and Wetlands Preserve Management Plan.
Can you summarize the plan in a sentence?
We have a management plan for every preserve that we protect. And the management plan for this preserve outlines what actions we need to take in order to ensure that the best habitat possible is maintained and enhanced over time. So we're looking for a rich wetlands habitat and a old growth style upland forest on the slopes above the river.
And I know that you have some pest species in here.
Yes we do. A lot of what these guys will be helping with is pulling out some of those non-native plant species that otherwise would be invading the elk meadows and the riverbanks and kind of displacing some of our native habitat.
I've been to a few plant removal parties. Will Jefferson Land Trust help arrange for things like that down here, or is it up to our personalities to?
Your personalities are a pretty big part of it. What I'd like to see happen with the preserve stewards is, as we go through the management plan, The management plan has a table at the back of it that has kind of actions that need to happen over the next 5 years, and at that point it will be updated. But over the next 5 years, we have an idea of what we need to see happen here to maintain and enhance that habitat. And what I'd like to see is the preserve stewards taking ownership of that plan and executing as many of the action mm-hmm. items as is possible. Now, some things are really more suitable for a group work party, and as you know and have been to, we do meet every other Thursday throughout the year to really tackle those things.
So this preserve would be in that rotation.
It will be if you find that you need additional support, and then you contact me and we get it out to the volunteer group.
So we can do work parties at our leisure with anyone we invite down mm-hmm. and then also get into that rotation, because it seems like that's going to be a big part of this.
And it has been the past couple of years. We've come down here in the springtime to work on tansy, and we have a small bindweed population starting.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So, team, this is one of the two access points on the preserve, and we'll also see the other access point today, but we're hoping that that will be gated off, maybe not by the close of this year, but by the springtime. So this particular area that we're looking at right now is the original Duckabush Oxbow Preserve, the 5 acres that we started with down here. And you can see that the land here is kind of in a little bit of an unnatural state. We've got this elevated platform and an old road grade leading up the hill. So this area was developed and had a cabin on it that was used as a part-time residence. And when the land trust acquired it, that cabin was removed. And I don't know if the land moving that happened to develop the cabin and home site cut off this oxbow, or if that was another natural process, but at some point there was an ancient channel that led from this oxbow pond to the Duckabush River. And we're going to walk along the edge and you'll see where that channel is now filled in. But we are looking at the potential of doing some floodplain restoration here, which would involve some earth moving to restore a more natural gradient to this whole area, and it would potentially reopen that ancient side channel to connect the existing oxbow pond back to the river.
And what would that do to enhance the habitat here? I mean, why would you want to do that?
Well, one of the conservation purposes of having a preserve here on the Duckabush River is to support the salmonid species in the river, and having that side channel and connected pond would be a really fantastic rearing habitat for young salmon. Also in here, there'll be things like we need to hand pull tansy at least annually, cut or pull the thistles, deal with the blackberries. And what I'd like to see happen is in each of these years, as we go through at the end of the year, is having our preserve stewards be keeping track of, check, I've done that, or I planned it, but we weren't able to get to it, or we're going to move it to this year.
Oh, the water is so much higher than the last time we were here.
If you've been here before, you'll notice that this is not often this high.
Yeah.
And remember how we were talking about an ancient side channel that used to connect the oxbow to the river? This is it, actually, right in here. And you can see it's partially filled now, which
actually,
is really cool.
It's making its own channel.
This is totally cool. You don't have to do anything. It's done it itself.
So, if you were out here without me, as you will be most other times, and you saw this, this is definitely something that you would want to write into your monitoring report as a change in the land. And it would be great to get some pictures. A short note about photos is I'm trying to move to an electronic-based system for the reports so that we can manage those images with the reports more easily. But we've never seen this thing. Is that Terry?
Hi there.
Hello.
Terry gave a friendly greeting to a large, gray-bearded man in a plaid flannel shirt, accompanied by a small dog, who approached us as we stood next to the newly carved channel to the Oxbow Pond. And just at that moment, we noticed a large salmon attempting to push up the channel, and another one already in the pond.
Oh, there's a bunch of salmon. Oh, is there one in there?
In there, yeah.
You see the fin rising?
Oh, yeah.
Probably a chum.
Salmon fin, very cool.
So you're a neighbor here?
Yeah. I live on at the trailer.
Oh, right next door here?
Yeah. Two doors, or three doors down.
So how long have you lived here?
About 4 years now. So,
And how often have you been flooded out?
Once that I've been water coming over my property. But my neighbors, seems like every year it happens, gets worse and worse due to the global warming and stuff, so.
What's your name? You're Terry?
Terry Breland.
So I guess your place is a little bit higher than theirs or something?
Yeah, well, I live in a trailer, so it's... Oh.
It's raised up.
2 feet off the ground already.
Oh, is it right? So.
And my property, when the guy brought fill dirt in to level it out, so it's a little higher than everybody else's. So.
No, it's a trailer, but it's not easy to just, like, you know, move when, oh, when the water rises.
It's pretty difficult if I had to move it. So.
So how do you like the land trust buying up around here?
It's new to us, put it that way. As long as, you know, everybody behaves, it's fine. Hey, get out of the mud. Come here, Muddy.
So, Terry, have you ever seen fish jump?
Never. That's the first time I saw a fish, isn't it?
Oh. Any sign of... You haven't had any hunters or poachers coming in this way?
Nothing down
here. Not down here. No. We're having them from the other end of the preserve coming in.
Over that way?
Yeah. Underneath the power lines.
Yeah.
So, no fun.
Every now and then we hear a pop, you know, somebody shooting over there, but not down here.
Okay.
There's no shooting in our area down here.
Yeah. We lucked out having you all at the
Plus Ralph,
road.
He's, the mayor of the street. And if he hears something, he'll call the police.
Okay.
But what I don't like is someone stealing lumber off your land. You see it cut down out there?
We're going to go take a look at it. Yeah.
I've been poaching of lumber?
Yeah, I've been trying to catch that.
It'd be great.
Where do they come in? Up at the
Well, right they away, come
the
in off
line?
The power line road. But I have a pretty good idea who is doing it. But
is the maple they're taking?
Or
yeah.
Maple and alder.
We made our way on upriver, grateful for our rubber boots as we picked our way across the fresh layer of silt and sand the previous night's flood had deposited along the ferns on the forest floor. The corpses of stranded salmon were liberally scattered across the landscape. Excellent examples for a lecture from Justin and Carrie on salmon identification.
Oh my God, he's huge.
Look at this one.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that one's really
cool. Lunch is served for the gulls. So I don't know fish at all.
You see how these pink spots create these lines going up and down along the body?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I look for.
And what does that indicate?
That it's a chum. Silvers, coho, they're a lot brighter. They turn kind of a green and some red colors. Very different than...
On the males, this strong jaw with the teeth sticking out is very distinctive for me on the chum. And the females as well sometimes have a little bit more of a pointed face than do a coho that's a little bit more rounded.
So what's the other name for humpies? The ones that have the big hump. Those are pinks.
Okay. Yeah, if you had been here a couple months ago, they were everywhere.
Really?
Especially the side channels were so full of them. There were bear tracks everywhere. I came down here and I was walking up and I heard something just go crashing off through the bushes. Something large. And when I walked over and looked, there was a salmon that had just been brought out of the water, and it was bit in and sheared in two spots. So it was all crooked, and its stomach was open. like it was going after the eggs, and it was very fresh. The eye was very clear.
And so in your monitoring reports as preserve stewards, there is a spot where we love to hear those, any kind of wildlife observations you may have or plant observations. Mm-hmm. And we maintain those records over time such that we can look back and say, wow, you know, there used to be a huge chum run here. Haven't seen quite so many in a while. Or we know that this has been bear habitat in the past. And so that stuff is just as important as checking off that, no, I don't see any warning signs of dumping and trash and trespass. Oh, really slippery in here, folks.
So do you have statistics in your mind, like how many preserves and how many stewards altogether?
We have a little bit over 360 acres of land trust-owned preserves here in East Jefferson County that are stewarded by 21 stewards and two stewardship staff.
And how many separate locations?
Separate preserves,
about
16.
Yeah.
You might get different numbers from different people because some of the preserves, like the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, are 3 miles long. And so there's these distinctive areas that are managed somewhat together and somewhat separately. They may have different stewardship teams on them.
As we walked, Carrie pointed out various invasive plants that she hoped the stewards would work on eradicating.
As we start to enter this riparian forest zone, this is one of the places that I would like to see the blackberries cut out of. And it's not going to happen all at once. It's a multi-year project. But what we like to do on other preserves that have really intensive management needs is to kind of tackle one thing per year or tackle one area per year and go through it in that way.
A bit further along, we passed a couple of small holly bushes.
Blackberry or Scots broom, I'd probably put holly lower down at the list. But in a place like this, where there's just isolated pieces of it, we could potentially just get them and then not have them spread like crazy. We've seen on other preserves where, you know, it's lower down on the totem pole and we've let it go, or it was already gone before we acquired the piece, and it does start to spread quite quickly. It reaches some kind of tipping point.
What is the worry with Scots broom?
Scots broom doesn't provide a whole lot in terms of food or cover for our native wildlife here, and it spreads quickly enough that it really takes over any chance of our local plants that do provide cover and forage from having a chance.
In another area, a Bonneville Power Administration right-of-way featuring high-tension lines, the lack of foliage was the problem. Justin suggested planting willows here.
And just stake the whole thing in willow. Because the willow doesn't get tall enough to interfere with the power lines, and it falls over, and then it'd be excellent beaver habitat.
And willow stakes is something that we could create with volunteers at a low cost.
Yeah.
I love that idea. We're part of what I'm doing with BPA is getting their height restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we do put in something that's too tall according to their restrictions, they could potentially come in and nuke it.
Oh.
Aside from the salmon, we saw no wildlife on the walk, although the signs were all around us. We found raccoon tracks and coyote scat and the carcass of a juvenile eagle with a broken wing. High on the bank at a bend in the river, we found a pile of mutilated salmon carcasses that Justin, who is a master tracker and woodsman, immediately identified as a recent bear feast. Nearby, he noticed an impression in the mud that I would have never noticed, but once I had it pointed out, it was obvious.
Did you see that, Steve? It's a beaver tail.
Is the dragon like a stick?
I bet it was standing still on the water's edge eating that branch there. And its tail rested right there, and you can see the perfect...
It's so perfectly shaped, like a beaver's tail.
Just like my footprint.
That's one of the reasons beaver are hard to track, is because their tail tends to obliterate the tracks, so you often will see just a like a smear of mud.
Then, down near the BPA right-of-way road, we found several sections of a felled alder tree.
Oh, that's the poaching.
It was during the tracking evaluation we saw that freshly cut.
Sad.
There was a big section of log that was dragged over here.
Uh-huh.
And I came back here 2 weeks ago, and there were truck tracks coming down, and that big section of log was gone. So they will likely come back to get this piece.
So how are they getting it out of here?
Well, look, and there's a water.
There's a road right here.
Yeah.
Which is why that gate is so
why that's
needed.
So important. If BPA doesn't come through in the next couple of months, we're going to have to find funding elsewhere to do it ourselves, because this...
We'll have a gate-building party.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, because of the length of time people have been using the power lines as public land, even though it's not technically, it is privately owned, but people feel entitled to land underneath power lines and to roads underneath power lines. We're not going to have a little medium-duty gate. It's going to have to be really pretty hefty. So it's a significant expense.
Yeah, there's definitely an attitude of entitlement
down
here. People feel really entitled to come to these lands. They view them as public. They view them as a place they can come and fish, gather wood, things like that. So it'll be difficult to stop anyone from actually coming down here.
Twice now I've installed T-posts in a line across the roads, and they just get ripped out. I know it's a little bit silly, but I am going to put a note on one of our boundary markers and attach it to this log. And we're going to want to pepper this area too then with the no hunting signs, because this is where we've had reports.
I can understand entitlement to fish and hunting maybe, but trees, I mean, that's just theft. I don't know. In my mind.
Yeah. Well, in their mind, it's the source of their economy.
Right.
It's their source of livelihood.
I mean, there is a difference between one downed alder and a clear cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I had my druthers, I'd rather have this tree sustainably harvest every so often by someone who's local than to have an entire mountainside bulldozed.
Yeah, and
is that the choice?
Ironically, the person cutting one tree here and there is the criminal.
Yes. Right. Yes, well said.
So if you run into something like this as a preserve steward, first of all, don't approach the person if you don't feel comfortable at all. And you'll have a hat like this to wear while you're out there representing the land trust. But don't put yourself in a situation that feels odd at all. If you do feel comfortable, definitely talk to the people and explain that this is a conservation area, that we're protecting the wildlife habitat, the bird habitat, that we need the trees, the shrubs, the clean water for those reasons. If you come across something like this, most often you won't find the people here. What's really going to be helpful is either a GPS point when we get our system running. And Justin is telling these folks what I want to set up is a couple of preserve steward kits that can be checked out of the office that have an iPad in them with the boundaries and the GPS abilities and a camera capabilities. And then you can be out here and put a mark. I saw this here. Here's a photo. Or if you're out here and you don't have it with you, I need a really accurate description of where this happened. Photos are really helpful with captions. And you'll want to document all this in your report. If it's going on actively, definitely call us. And we'll probably call the police to come down and help talk to the person.
At the Duckabush Oxbow and Wetlands Preserve, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.